But we're going to hit them with a true test.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our Joint Committee on Transportation Preservation and Modernization this fine Monday evening, May 22nd, 2017. I would like to note that Representative Lively is excused this evening, and I'd like to welcome Representatives Marsh and Vial. Thank you for joining us again. Tonight we have our good Senator and Vice Chair Boquist presenting information on accountability. And this should be our last meeting to go through the work that the five work groups have done. So we're hoping to wrap this up this evening. We'll go ahead and get started, and I will turn it over to Senator Boquist. You all should have received a document dated May 18th, 2017, that was a rough draft on accountability. Thank you. And I think Senator Boquist is going to go through the slides that the work group put together, and then we will open this up to questions from the slides and from the document that you have before you. Senator Boquist.
Madam Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
Before the senator starts, just a question, and I'll admit I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, but there are so many versions of draft language floating around, at least three that I'm aware of. So what I'd like to ascertain for those of us that have studied previous drafts, I asked Patrick specifically today to bring to my office, what are we going to talk about tonight? And so is the May 18th the final document that we're discussing tonight? And who made the adjustments in prior drafts? How did we get to a point? Because there are significant changes. And I'm just trying to figure out, what do we got here, and am I on the same page with everybody else?
You're correct. The May 18th is the draft that we're looking at. Senator Byron.
The May 18th is the draft. It's the one that has the blue and yellow band. The prior drafts that you would have seen, Senator, as a member of the accountability work group, is Heidi drafted them, gave them to you, made your initial corrections, and then she did this one. One of the things that, frankly, I asked her when I read the first, the corrected draft is the ODOT section had been amended over the years and was very duplicitous in different places, and we asked her to streamline it. So nothing new in language, but just put in a more logical order with the redundancy taken out. And your changes, the committee, the accountability group's changes put in as you suggested them.
Okay, so what caused me to ask this question is, having studied, and I think carefully, previous drafts that I was partially responsible for helping to put together, we now get the May 18th, and I've taken a somewhat superficial look at it. And I'm wondering, is it the May 18th draft, Mr. Boquist, Chair Boquist, Senator Boquist, Colonel Boquist?
I'm the facilitator.
Facilitator
Somebody
Boquist.
Turn, I'm the facilitator.
Is it the May 18th draft that has the whole OTC terminated at a date certain?
Yeah, I read it that way, too, which I think is what we're going to come back to.
That's a mistake.
Good, because that differs substantially from where our little...
The OTC terminated?
Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
No,
I saw that same thing.
Representative Olson.
That would be an error. I didn't pick that up.
Senator, Representative Olson.
That would be correct. May 18th.
Did you terminate it, Andy?
Negative.
Well, somebody shot the OTC, and I'm interested in knowing who, and I substantially object. So that,
Senator, we may have work to do on this draft, and what I would suggest is we allow Senator Boquist to begin. We'll go through this and make corrections as we need to. Senator Boquist.
First, for the record, Senator Brian Boquist, I represent myself, and I'm only the facilitator here trying to, you know, get the other 13 people on the same sheet of music and the same blue and yellow piece of paper so that they can do pen and ink changes. So how we're going to walk through this is that First, we're going to go through conceptually the slides that you've seen before, talk about each line item. I've got a list of questions that are actually related to the slides that are up here in the accountability pieces, and then we will, after we've had the general discussion there, we'll go back for those of you who have had the time, and good Senator Johnson, I've not read the bloody thing, okay? It tells you how efficient I am at the moment. And then we'll go back and look at this for people who have caught things that are actually in the present draft version so we can give legislative counsel some guidance along here. So being the good facilitator, I have no position, Senator Johnson, because I haven't taken one on this. What I do want to do, though, is start to the slides to my left-hand side here up on the screen, which is basically the overview and sort of the intent, and then ask some questions that we have that are related to the intent, and then dive down into the details for those of you who have seen it. I did point out that if you did not catch it, and I just want to point out that I have read something, and that is on the fourth page on line 5A, just so you know, the or should be an of. It's a misspell on there. So you can see I know something about the draft, but I'm counting on all of your editing to do this. So with that, if you start at the top up here, and again, we'll just sort of walk through the concept and talk about it, and then finish up with a piece of paper you have in front of you. And I'll have my red ink pen here, and I can assure you that there's two counsels sitting at the other end of the video screen. It's the camera hidden up here, taking copacetic notes to figure that out. And they are frankly tired of listening to the four of us, and so they would be delighted to listen to you instead of the four of us. If you look at the top up here, one of the very first things we talked about before was trying to strengthen legislative oversight. There's been some pushback, and I've heard some discussions. One of the concepts was to make the Joint Transportation Committee permanent for policy and budget authority over the top of OTC. It required the OTC to provide the committee with biennial budgets and projects, and then require any ODOT Inspector General to provide reports and copies to the to the Joint Transportation Committee. Before we move out of that block, I'm looking for any input or any concepts that you have in terms of making a standing committee in statute for joint transportation, if there are comments.
Are you taking anecdotal comments as well? I understand that there may be a small tsunami on the sea of marital,
My wife doesn't care about this bill, just so you know.
of leadership tranquility with respect to a separate budget and policy committee.
I think, Senator Boquist, there is a question as to whether it should be a permanent joint transportation committee in statute or a committee that is designated by the presiding officers. And I think that's a question that we should have a discussion about.
Well, that's exactly what we're doing right now, is having a discussion about that. So I would encourage any of you to put forth your opinions through the chair here. I'm supposed to be the facilitator, and she's supposed to kind of look left and right. But
you
I
wish
see
to have a discussion on
this? Yes, right.
We do. May I?
Chair Byer.
The push for that is primarily from me and perhaps Representative Olson. I can't remember. We've talked about it before. This is something that actually the legislature adopted this same provision in 1999. And as you all know, that it doesn't really make any difference what's in statute when it comes to the operation of the chambers. It's the rules that count. And in the past, the presiding officers in the subsequent session after 99 chose not to implement it. And it was taken out, I believe, in 27 as part of the LC's ordinary cleanup of the statutes. Where that concept comes from is, frankly, the Washington legislature, which has had this kind of process for many, many, many years to have a stronger oversight on their transportation system so that you have consistency of budget and policy. They have a very strong commission. One of the problems, I believe, with our current system in Oregon is we're very splintered on that. We have policy in one place, in fact, in two committees, the House and the Senate, and then you have a Ways and Means Committee that has a sub that has a number of different areas besides transportation, so it never has really the opportunity to focus consistently on transportation. I know that some people have concerns that you're separating transportation from the rest of the budget, but the reality is it's totally separate. There is no general fund money that, with a couple of little tweak exceptions, that goes into the transportation budget. So functionally, you could separate it out and have more oversight. I believe, based on all the complaints we have heard, that had we made that change in 2001 and thereafter, we wouldn't have had the complaints about accountability that we have heard recently, because, frankly, no one's really watching the store. And so that was the advocacy for creating a solidified, streamlined process to keep track of the budget and provide ongoing oversight of the committee.
Senator Johnson.
Under the model that you just described, would that be to the exclusion of any other transportation policy committees? Would this committee be empowered to draft legislation as well as review the budget in one joint committee?
Yes.
Okay, and is it yes to both questions? Would it exclude any other House or a Senate committee on transportation?
The assumption is, like we're a joint committee dealing with this, you would have a joint committee that had exclusive authority over transportation policy, the budget, and oversight.
One last question. Would it increase the chances that I can get a Smokey Bear license plate?
Absolutely.
As soon as I'm gone. Yeah.
Not if I'm here.
Just checking.
Representative Olson.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Boquist, I mean, as we're talking about this with the joint, I think you almost have to jump to Section 27 of what our draft is, because of what the description is up there. It's policy and budget together, like what Senator Beyer was describing on it. This was something that we talked a little bit about in the accountability group. Not very much at length. I brought it up here, if you remember, during the presentation initially. The more I do the homework on it, it's working for Washington, this model. What Section 27 describes on the Joint Committee on Transportation is convoluted. I just got to tell you, it's a little bit more than what I think it should be. It's combining the House and the Senate Transportation Committees together. I don't think that's what you want to do. I don't think that's where you want to go. I think you want to really kind of follow something similar to the model of what we've done the last 3 years with the joint effort on marijuana, where you've had 5 members from the House, 5 members from the Senate, and you have those appointed like that. But the thing is that you assign, both Senate President and the Speaker would assign people who are good and versed in both budget and policy. You keep it small for 10. You're able to work more fluid with what's happening with OTC as well as ODOT, that they can have that communication quickly. I just, you know, the way it is right now designed, it's just way too cumbersome. Yeah. So that's my two bits on Section 27.
Representative McLean.
The one thing I like about what Representative Olson said is that things do change, and there are different times in transportation where there are other issues that may not be budget or may not be projects or may not be review of the actual system. And so there is a need for other committees. Autonomous vehicles come to mind. There's different things that we're talking about as far as TNCs and autonomous vehicles that might not get the actual time or energy if you actually put it into statute and didn't have the opportunity for regular House and Senate committees to talk about some of these current issues that are coming up that are policy-minded. And so I would like to hear a little bit more. I'm not convinced one way or the other right now. I think there's pros and cons on making it putting it in the statute. And I think there are some benefits to having our speakers and our president be able to look at who's here, what the issues are this year, and what kind of a schedule we have. And I'm not convinced that there's no budget review. And I've also seen that there have been as many compliments through this process in the last 8 or 9 months that I've been involved that talk about the good things that our department's doing. So I don't think that we need to make it sound like we're trying to stop some tide here of bad management or bad projects or bad work. We can always do a better job reviewing, but I think we need to really check out what the two different programs actually give us.
Chair Beyer.
Well, I was only Respectfully, I guess I disagree. I think you're more likely to get consistent policy on something like autonomous vehicles if you have a joint committee working on it, rather than the back and forth between the two committees. I will note that looking at this, the Section 27, the appointment process in here is not structured right. I mean, it really would be just like any other committee. As this one was appointed, the Speaker appoints the House members and the President appoints the Senate members. So, and frankly, the model is just like Ways and Means.
Okay.
Just has one subject area.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair McKeown. So I just wanted to just play this out and understand. So the would they be actually hearing bills? When I mean, the language in the draft is review. Every single section starts with review. So then is this reviewing all projects? Is there limits on that? Is that is they going to be bringing, I mean, generally, a committee hears bills. And so would this just be a committee that hears an update? And then how does that information translate? If it's not going to have a Ways and Means function, then are they going to go again ahead in front of Ways and Means? And then I, one of the things I had, and I spoke with Senator Boquist, we just happened to come up, and I, with Representative Olson and I, and I'm happy to have it sent out. I had Heidi, the drafter, come up with a list of all the reports that are required in the current draft right now. And I just got this. And so one thing I think would be helpful is if we all kind of think about when we're going to, for the accountability piece, when we're thinking about the reporting all the way through the whole bill, what that looks like in total, and to make certain that what we're asking for is reasonable. It's a little bit off topic now of this, but so there's all these different reports that are gonna we're gonna be asking throughout the whole bill, right? And then are they going to, if we were to have this special transportation committee, how would that work? Would they bring all those reports in front of that committee? Would they bring them in front of Ways and Means? I just wanted to flush it out, like how would the process actually work if there weren't bills? Because usually a committee obviously hears bills. Mm-hmm. So,
right. Chair Beyer.
Senator, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, the vision, think of it in terms of it as a committee just like any other committee for policy. It would deal with all the transportation bills. It would be the transportation committee for the legislature. And I would argue again, also have a budget. I think of it in context of my Senate committee, when we separate from that, we have ODOT come in during the interim. Every meeting they come in, and one of our standard things is they report on their projects.
Oh, I understand.
Where they're
going.
So you have that, and I think the only other thing you're looking at here is if you're looking at the budget, it's just kind of the normal. I think it gives you the chance, it would give the legislature the chance to have one committee that's keeping track of what's going on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, I can definitely follow up, please. I can, Chair Beyer, I can completely understand the value of that. I was trying, and of course we have during the interims, people come and give updates, and yes, of course we do that. But if this committee, would they hear bills as they came forward is my question.
Yes,
Okay, so I was just, because it says in the language, so they would hear bills, they would, with the review, let's say they found something, they would then say, recommend, don't recommend, there would be a recommendation process to full Ways and Means. Or I'm just trying to flush out how it would.
If I may.
Chair Beyer.
Remember, the proposal is that they would have the budget responsibility, so the recommendation would be just like Ways and Means makes a recommendation, or on that would be the same level of authority.
Yeah, I can
and of
see
course
the pros
anything that any committee does then is subject to action. I mean, committees have no authority, it's the chambers that have the authority, so it'd be like anything else. If it was a legislation, it would have to go to the chamber.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I just wanted to flush out exactly how it works, since it would be a new area, and which of the so they would hear all the updates on all the reports of everything that they're doing. Big, small, everything.
Yes. Senator Winters.
Just a quick follow-up on this train of thought. You're talking standing committee with an additional budget, but they would not actually refer any budget to Joint Ways and Means. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Gotcha.
Colleague, just for a point of reference, I mean, there's multiple legislatures that actually do this exact same thing. In fact, their policy and their budget committees are one and the same, and then they consolidate it afterwards. And so it's, I mean, I know in Nevada they've done it that way before, and in other legislatures where the senators and the representatives do exactly the same thing. It just connects policy and budget. And then there are also states that do it the reverse way, and that is that they do their budget like we do on a biannual basis, but the same subcommittees of what their version of their budget committee is, in fact, the policy committee. For example, the Joint Transportation Committee would be the Ways and Means Committee elsewhere. So it's not uncommon across the United States in a variety of different ways they do this.
Representative McLean. Senator Byers, I really appreciated the clarity that it's a committee like any other committee. But making it a statutory committee, for example, like the audit committee, when I've been on the audit committee, this is my first year on that, and there are rules in the Senate and rules in the House that cause bills to be able to go or not go to the audit committee. But what you're saying is that when we straighten up a little bit of this drafting, that they would be able to initiate policy bills, they would be able to review budget, they would be able to review reports, and act as a joint committee that is the basis for review of our transportation budget and system.
Just like this committee.
Just like this committee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Madam Chair, it would just be smaller, essentially. I mean, you know, 14 of us right now, we're not real fluid. I mean, because, I mean, if we're wanting to try to connect with ODOT or with OTC, it's really hard to get all 14 of us together. So if you have a little bit smaller size, it works a little bit better.
Thank you. Representative Violet, do you have a comment?
Just that I would also support the idea of having one joint committee that dealt with both policy and budget. And a good example of why I feel that way is the fact that we had a Washington County Transportation Futures Study that we funded to the tune of $1.5 million just a couple of sessions ago, and we've never really had a report on that. And they tell me it's because they didn't really know where to go. They weren't quite sure who that should have been given to. So I think it would clear up some of that confusion.
What I think I'm hearing is that, you know, conceptually speaking, for Four Corners, we'd like to see the draft, but it needs to be restructured in the manner in which, you know, it looks like how a joint committee would function with the full powers, and instead of just a list of review this, review that, look more like the tasking we see for a normal committee.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's sort of the takeaway I have there.
Vice Chair Benz has a comment, and then we'll move on.
Just a question. I'm not sure who to ask it of, but where in Section 27 is that word budget? I don't see it.
It's not in
Section 27.
It's in the version dated the 31st of May.
Follow it.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I'm just a mediator, whatever you are.
Facilitator.
I guess the question is, can someone state what the thinking was? Was this group to help design the budget, comment on the budget? What's it supposed to do when it comes to the budget? Pass the budget? What's it supposed to do? This is a statement to those who are drafting whatever it is we're supposed to do this.
The notion was just like Ways and Means does now, they react to the proposal that would come forward from. When you get into further sections of this, the idea is that the OTC would adopt a budget or approve a budget submission that their staff prepared. They would send it to the governor, and then the governor, as part of her budget, or his budget, depending on who's there at that time, would submit it to the legislature, as happens now.
Right. So when you say submit it to the legislature, to this committee?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's always submitted to the whole legislature, but the assumption being that portion of it would be given to this committee to review.
and then upon review, what happens to the budget?
It would be a bill, a budget bill, just like all the other 5,000 series bills, and it would be reported out to the House and the Senate.
So it circles ways and means. It avoids ways and means.
Yes.
Doesn't, okay.
This is for transportation, the proposals, this is ways and means.
Yeah. And after.
I've got two people ahead of you. Senator Johnson.
Well, I've gotten myself kind of tangled up here. I'm looking at the May 18th draft, and I'm reading Section 10, that is the Efficiency and Accountability Advisory Committee. And then we jump over to Section 27, where we're talking about the Standing Committee of the Legislature. It feels to me as though we are creating the palace of bureaucracy here, and I am really confused as to how these various committees will interact with each other. One of them has members of the public on it, and transportation stakeholders, however you want to define that, and other individuals on an ad hoc basis. And are they supposed to advise the Standing Joint Committee on Transportation?
I'm going to Senator Beyer, then Senator Taylor, then Representative Olson.
Really yours.
I was just going to follow up. Thank you, Chairs. I just wanted to follow up on Senator Johnson's point. That's why one of the reasons why I had this very tedious task done, and poor Heidi and Elsie came up with all the reports in here, is because these reports that for the accountability piece are being given to some to the Efficiency and Accountability Group, and some to the, you know, to the, what would be to the OTC. I mean, we need to be clearer about which of the, all this reporting that we're going to be requiring, who are they reporting to? And if, because if some of them, as Senator Johnson pointed out, the Efficiency and Accountability Advisory Committee has a certain kind of makeup to it, that would be, and then how that would relate and fold into this Joint Transportation Committee. It's not that I'm opposed to having the Joint Transportation Committee, but it having its own standalone budget, separate from Ways and Means, I can see that being good in some sessions and perhaps not so good in some other sessions. I mean, how is that going to get determined? Maybe someone who knows more about that than I do.
Just speaking to the Efficiency Committee here, this comes from, was recommended by some of our stakeholders. It's based on the Colorado model, and my understanding is it actually is very similar to a group that's already exists internal to ODOT. Think of it as under sort of a Deming model, or one of those is, it's a continuous improvement. The idea is an internal group to ODOT.
Yeah.
Doesn't talk to the legislature. It's internal to ODOT that's made up of outside stakeholders and internal management that sort of is looking for best practices and reviewing projects that go on after it's done, say what worked, what didn't work, and report that back to the overseers of ODOT, which is the Oregon Transportation Committee.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if I am right, we are on section of 11.
The accountability,
yeah,
the subcommittee,
the EAC, the efficiency,
yeah, efficiency accountability is on section 10.
Yeah. Okay. So, you need to kind of go look down through that. This is all new language, Senator Johnson, from what we had originally submitted and discussed. And I don't know where that came from. Be truthful with you. I had great conversation with the director of ODOT, Matt Garrett, on this issue about, I don't want to say about a month and a half ago. We just kind of flushed that whole thing out about the EAC concept at the time. And originally we were wanting to stay with 10 members of it. That was it. And there was no ad hoc to it. So it was going to be the OTC commissioner or a chair person would be having someone themselves or another represent from OTC. The director would be there or someone who was an agent representing him. And initially we were going to assign all of his department heads as directors to be part of that too, and then only have two members that were at large for a total of 10, if you remember that kind of conversation that we had. Mr. Garrett recommended that actually there was really only need for four of his directors that he felt necessary to be there, but open up the door then for two additional people at large. So you still keep 10 for the EAC concept. And that's where we're going. I have no idea, though, where the ad hoc piece came in at. And that just, you know, to me is, doesn't make sense right now.
Representative Olson, I'm beginning to fear that is now 6:05 and we're still on the first line of the accountability recommendation.
Nobody said this was going to be easy.
Probably important. Madam Chair, this is the way it was with the other four.
I think what I'd like to do is hold that segment till we come to it, if you don't mind. And I think we should probably move on from this.
But let's close out. So we're at least of the consensus that for drafting Four Corners, we're going to look at drafting a joint transportation committee that covers both policy and budget modeled on existing structure we have right now and some language like that so you can look at it later. So with that, we're going to move on to the Oregon Transportation Commission. I'll just point out to you that this subgroup in paragraph 10, which was you've spent a lot of time on, called the Efficiency and Accountability Advisory Committee, is a sub-entity of the Oregon Transportation Commission under this documentation. So let's go back to the parent group, if you look up on the board right up here, and that is the basic discussion on the Oregon Transportation Commission itself. I'm going to read down through these and then go back to the beginning and look for input. We talked about expanding the Oregon Transportation Commission to 7 members, so there was at least 1 member from each ODOT region and then several at large. OTC members would serve at the pleasure of the governor, but the governor, of course, could terminate them. But if they terminated and one of the individuals requested a public hearing before the governor, they could get that. We have existing committees and commissions in the state of Oregon that have that existing structure now. The next one was a small OTC independent staff. So the Oregon Transportation Commission would have a small independent staff, independent of the director, to provide advice, consult, and get them information. OTC appointments, the OTC would make an appointment of an ODOT Inspector General responsible for internal audits and handling consumer complaints. Oregon Transportation Commission would appoint the ODOT Director subject to Senate confirmation. This is a move back to what I think was originally in about 1999, and it was changed later by the legislature. OTC approves the biennial budget and project submission to the governor and legislature. That's very typical. Most boards and commissions we have out there right now, a large swath of them, their executive director and their staff put it together. Their board or their commission approves it. It's then submitted on through the governor's process through Department of Administrative Services. And with that, we're going to stop it there so we don't get into this accountability work group and go back to the beginning and talk a little bit about the size of the Oregon Transportation Commission. It's presently 5 members, basically 5 members at large. The proposal, I think, that came out that one of you can speak to is looking at expanding it either to 7 members, 1 from each ODOT region. Is there comments, concerns? That gives you 2 at large. That way every region is represented. And then there are 2 at large. Representative Smith, yes. There.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Would it be possible for staff to get at least our office any situations or circumstances where there's been a breach of accountability, a breach of ethics, a breach of fiscal fiduciary responsibility that's occurred within ODOT in the last, let's go, 4 years. Can I have somebody provide?
I'm here, so we will ask him when he gets back.
Okay. I'm trying to reconcile in my mind the work we're trying to do versus what's occurring today.
Senator Johnson?
Well, I don't know how deep you want to go into that. Were there was it something so significant there was prosecution, or was it an appearance of a conflict of interest? Let's say being a lawyer for a group opposing a certain kind of transportation facility, sitting on the commission, and making.
I'm trying to get my arms around what we're trying to solve, because I heard your earlier comment, Senator, about are we creating a bureaucracy, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe there's a definite need for this additional level of oversight, but I guess I just need to have someone show me that there's this need for additional oversight.
Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and again apologies for my overlapping earlier commitments. I just wanted to give a little input on that. Number one, I share Representative Smith's potential concern. I don't want to speak for you, but My concern about this broadly is it sounds like a lot of setting up a whole new bureaucratic system that I am concerned about with good intention. Yet I think the unintended consequence of setting up a whole another bunch of levels, a whole another kind of parallel structure, that I worry about. That I worry about broadly. Number two, on the expansion, we have this conversation in the city of Portland all the time about the fact that we have five commissioners, but there's no requirement about where they all live. And so the concern is that, honestly, they're not parochial enough, that if you had regions that they all had to belong to, then you might get more kind of more local concern. And my question about having five of the seven members each be from a region, would you be inviting more parochialism for your region? The balance between wanting broader coverage for the state versus does it become too parochial? And everybody and each of those five are just kind of, fighting or angling for their situation. And then I just have to throw out finally the OTC members serving at the pleasure of the governor, but any early termination only after a public hearing. Is it that way on any other?
Yeah. Let me follow up once again that it's actually correct. Okay. So we have other boards and commissions in which the, just for clarification, in which if the governor terminates that, a member, for example, let's face reality, we have had Transportation Commission members terminated by the governor since I've been sitting in this legislature, okay? So if they're terminated, there are other boards and commissions in which that member can request a public hearing before the governor. And that's actually the language that would be in here someplace is taken out of one of those other statutory places. So that does exist. Whether we want to do it or not, I'm just pointing out that it's there.
Senator Gerard.
Yeah, the committee, we looked at several different things, and the expansion from five to seven was mixed at best. I personally prefer smaller groups because I think they work better, and I think you can come to consensus a lot faster. And I think there was some people that favored seven. But the one thing that I really wanted that really failed to make it in is when we interviewed the past chairs of the OTC, I think the qualifications and who is appointed to those positions is the utmost of importance. And so I wanted, if nothing else, to have a civil engineer. I have a dentistry background. If I went before the board, I didn't want you judging me. I wanted dentists judging me. So I think that you absolutely have to have somebody that at least knows the background of ODOT and what 100,000 yards of gravel really is. I just think that that's important. I also think that you're dealing with numbers that the average person has no clue. And and we have the same problem in Ways and Means. I don't know what $100 million buys. So you're having to do, I think you need executives on there that have dealt with huge numbers that really know, what the labor costs and that sort of thing should be. So I wanted to see some qualifications on the OTC so that we get the highest possible caliber individual making these decisions. This is probably one of the most important commissions that I can think of in the state of Oregon, and deals with the most money, and we need the highest qualified people dealing with it.
Additional comments?
Yeah, you don't need any qualification to be.
I'm sorry that Representative Lively is not here because he was a member of the accountability work group, but he's not here to comment tonight. Yes.
I just wanted to say that's what I just find that I'm interested in Senator Gerard's comments because another thing I had kind of circled and made a question mark about was the proposal that none of the folks could have a direct or indirect financial interest on anything in the OTC. But if you're going to get somebody who is who is going to be knowledgeable about this, how do you get somebody who is, do you only get retired people who know about? Nothing against retired people. I hope to be one myself someday. But that was another thing that I noticed is that kind of push and pull between people who know about it versus you're not supposed to have a financial interest in it. And I just also wanted to throw out that even with we may have come to consensus on having a permanent joint committee, but it was not unanimity because I'm not crazy about that idea.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I feel like I need to, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because we've been through this already. But to the question that Representative Smith just mentioned about the concern with ODOT or any complaints, that type of thing. If you recall, the four of you in leadership felt that it was necessary to move forward with some type of team to review what was happening with ODOT. Initially, we were looked at as the audit team. It was real quick. After a while, we had the discussion that there was no need to go with an audit team, but we needed to look more at accountability and to then come back to this body with recommendations of where we went with having a number of meetings. When you take a look at what, I mean, the $1 million that we spent on the McKinsey audit, that in itself reflects back that Governor Brown, well over a year ago, felt that there was some need getting out in front of this whole thing, that if we're going to go to the voters and push a monster bill for dollars, we better darn well have a perceived value that the voters are getting from us, that the dollars that we're going to use are going to be spent well and wisely. We believe that the best way, and I believe also with the insight that you had for your wisdom too with this whole thing, that's why we needed to come back with some type of an accountability measure. I believe that if you don't have an accountability measure in this, similar to what we have right now, I think we're going to fail.
Other comments before we... Yeah, farther down, there's small independent staff for ODOT. Is there any discussions in terms of thoughts and processes? I mean, in terms of making sure that the OTC has an small independent staff? There's two to your right there.
Thank you. Just a comment. So where that comes from is from the current members of the commission who felt like they needed that.
Senator Johnson.
I'm very supportive of the notion of an independent staff, but as I am getting deeper into this draft, the titles that we're using, the assignments that we're making, I'm now looking at the nomenclature Inspector General, and I know that some colleagues have taken exception to that particular titling. But as I'm looking at it, I don't know whether we were looking at an internal audit function and now we're making the person who holds this responsibility man the Ratfink hotline. And I'm trying to figure out what assignments are they supposed to have. We never discussed having an ODOT internal auditor manning the complaint hotline and filling out the forms. This May 18th, is it May 18th, mm-hmm. version?
Yes.
Seems to me to be so larded up with layers and layers of bureaucracy that the chair is nodding, it seems to transcend the simpler view that the Accountability Committee took in looking at how do you get a second set of eyes near the commission, and we're building a monument to bureaucracy in all of this.
Well, Madam Chair, hopefully you'll take and photocopy that with a red ink pen, and then
I got yellow. Does that work?
Yeah. Well, you know, unfortunately, I don't know. I mean, the only thing I can tell you is I think we had legislative staff and legal counsel and others try and pull legislation and text from other places and sort of insert it into these places to get it to where it is.
Well,
I can assure you, I did not write it. Just so you know, right?
I might just also add that while I'm looking at causing our auditor to be the receipt of the reports of waste, inefficiency, and abuse. I don't know how many of these hotlines we're going to have and how we don't look like a box of mice somebody tipped over. If someone sees two guys leaning on a shovel and calls the Secretary of State, calls this hotline, calls, I don't know, the DAS hotline, how do you reconcile all those reports? How do you do case management? Is all I want is somebody to count the numbers at ODOT that knows auditing. I don't necessarily want them to be... I mean, how do you decide two guys leaning on a shovel? Are they a port crew, a city crew, a
county crew?
County crew. I don't know. It's
lovely.
Representative McClain.
I want to get on back to our facilitator, but I really do agree with Senator Johnson on this. I mean, there's 12 reports that were listed out in Senator Taylor's report back to us. 12 reports, plus all of these descriptions of things, and a small independent staff, it doesn't sound like that. And so I think we really do need to make some direction to the folks that are going to be continuing to write, that we want simplicity and we want direct responsibility of the oversight that the Accountability Committee was looking for.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chairman Kuhn. So, you know, obviously, you know, we have this rule here, and the legislature majority will rule in the end. And so I just want to throw out my, regarding the using the inspector general language, the, as folks know, right now, agencies are have internal auditors. That's how that works. They have different standards than the Secretary of State's Audits Division has, and those are, they do similar work, but it's not exactly the same. And the one of the things that I was looking at through all of this is that if, and there's an if there, if we decide to go forward with an inspector general model, it's to be very clear about what that is, and then if that office is going to, as I see the draft as it is now, it would have audits, it would have a waste hotline, and then it would need staff to do just general reports, I guess, of some sort of type that aren't necessarily audits. And then it seems that we want, it seems that some of the conversations is wanting people to be looking into things to see if some, if there's some sort of wrongdoing going on. And I can just tell you that audits aren't really necessarily structured in the way to find the small little things like that on a day-to-day basis in projects. I mean, audits are designed to, you have an objective, you set out, you have criteria, you go and examine and look at a very specific project to determine the answer to a very specific question. And so if we are going to go forward, and obviously if that's what the committee decides, then that's what the committee decides, then we just want to be mindful that we explain that this, that would be very different here in the state of Oregon. We don't have inspector generals and agencies, and that then we have an inspector general, and then we would have an auditor, then we would have the hotline. And then I had brought up that how the Secretary of State's office handles the hotline, that is a whole effort in itself. That's that they have parameters there. There's staff that are very specifically trained, and then the idea that that would then get transferred over to ODOT. I mean, people call into the Secretary of State's office with a whole list of complaints, and so it would be something that we would just need to be mindful to kind of flesh out. And again, if that's what we decide to do, great. Then let's just make certain that it's, that it's fleshed out, and then how the Inspector General would fit into this, the Accountability Committee, the OTC Committee, and then the Legislative Committee, how that would all piece together. I just wanted to make certain that we're clear before we go forward. So, okay.
But Mr. Meyer, did you follow up on
that? I did. I think it's an interesting discussion.
Right.
When we started this process a year ago, what we heard a lot was people were distrustful that ODOT was running well. Whether they were or not, there was a high level of distrust that the numbers, they questioned the projects. They questioned whether the legislature ever really paid any attention at all. And then we spent $1 million on a study to take a look at that and give us some input. And I find it odd now that we're back wondering whether we should actually spend any money or any energy at all addressing those problems. Whether you call it an inspector general or an internal auditor, I agree with Senator Taylor that the standards are there. But the reality is we do have some hotlines. There are reports that go to the Secretary of State, and nothing happens with them. Nobody pays any attention. They never get transmitted to the agency. And certainly as legislators, we never hear that. You know, what, as legislators, how do we know whether there's problems or not unless we get information in some way about it other than a constituent calling us up complaining about they're not, you know, this agency or that is not responsive. So the question is, how do you do that? And how do you provide the public with the actuality and the image that their dollars are being well spent?
Senator Winters, did you have a comment?
I just have, because I'm trying to balance out the function of the department and then the function of OTC and then the oversight function of the accountability piece and looking at policy, budget, and some of those activities. And then how much in the weeds do you want each one of them to do? And I'm trying to listen and trying to figure out whether you want the audit and inspector general inside the department as well as inside of the, quote, the overriding group, or do you want to stand alone? So those are, as I'm listening and trying to figure out, and I'm beginning to think like the good Senator Johnson, how much bureaucracy do we want to create?
Absolutely.
Because with all of this, it is a creation. It's beyond just talking about, policy bills and budget of a standing committee and that role and function. Then, as we begin to pile on more and where those particular functions go, with each one that we create, it's going to create another bureaucracy.
I think I had Representative Olson and then Senator Taylor.
Just Madam Chair and committee members, in our group, we did not talk much about it at all when it came to the hotline issue. So how this surfaced, I have no idea. I do know that the department does have a hotline for people to call in. So.
Thank you.
And just for the record, just to clarify here, they have a hotline, okay? And they also have an auditor, an internal auditor. Mm-hmm. And what you're seeing before you is moving the hotline and the internal auditor underneath the jurisdiction of the Oregon Transportation Commission. So it's not creating something new. It's consolidating it under the commission instead of being under ODOT itself. So it's not like we're creating a broad spectrum of new bureaucracy here. How it's written up in here, because like I said, I haven't read this, but just keep in mind that these functions that we're talking about already exist out there. The question is, do you want it in a manner, and you guys have to decide this, do you want it in a manner in which you pick up the line, and I'll tell you, every constituent in my district that's ever called the Secretary of State's line has then called me and told me what an utterly, totally worthless effort that was, because nothing ever happened. Now, whether that was a product of two Secretary of States that have been here since then, or whether that's, a problem with the system, but they've not been happy with it. So the question really is back to, do you want to consolidate that? The good Senator Taylor has pointed out there is a distinct difference between an auditor and an inspector general. They are two sort of different functions. The federal government and multiple agencies and states have inspector generals, and so the question before us is just to provide, you have a precursor of what staff drafted from you. I would encourage every one of you who are going through here, do not just walk out after you've made your comments. If you expect the draft to get any better, you're going to have to do a little work outside of this room with pen and ink. Mm-hmm. And identify those things so that you give some guidance, because once again, the four of us didn't dream this up. It's we asked legislative counsel and the best staff we have to try and take all of your ideas and mesh them together. And so very specifically, after tonight, because this is a lot more work here than I think the other general concepts you're seeing, you're going to need to do a little pen and ink changes yourself and get back to us so that we can give some guidance to the staff. With that, Madam Chair, I think you have some other people.
Thank you.
Right.
And I believe I have Senator Taylor next.
Thank you, Chair McKeown. So Senator Lively and I went through the bill that we had before the latest draft, and we went through and we identified all the areas where we thought we could make changes. So we can go through it again with this most recent draft and line it up. I wanted to build on what Senator Boquist said and also make certain that, so with the comments from Senator Beyer, that, so first of all, obviously ODOT has an accountability system in place, and they do have to follow the Oregon Accounting Manual. They do have to, they have an internal auditor, they have all these things, and they have their waste hotline. Enhancing it, making certain that whatever we're asking them to do, looking at the reports, I'm mostly worried, not mostly, I want to make certain that all this reporting that we're asking them to do with all of these, that we're mindful in building in. They already came and gave us a presentation, ODOT did, of all the reports that they do that the legislature has required of them, and then with all these other ones and combining them. But going forward, they already have an internal auditor, and we need to have an accountability section in the bill. I completely support with Representative Olson had. I think that'd be irresponsible, and I think we've had enough feedback. It's just a matter of perhaps enhancing and having tighter language with this new massive investment of dollars, and then whether or not we go forward with the accountability commission or committee or whatever we're calling it, in addition to the changes made to the OTC, that's where a little bit of the rub is. But we will need to have an accountability section in the bill. I mean, this is a significant influx of new money, and we will have to have a way of it to report back. So I think it's an interesting conversation for tonight, and I hope that we all walk away understanding what the decision points are that we have to make, and I'm sure Senator Boqvist will do a lovely job surmising for us in the end what all the decisions we need to make are, but it's really not that Senator Lively, I mean, Representative Lively and I did it. We went through and we wrote up all of our comments of what areas we think should be changed, so I'll stop now. But
so. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, excuse me. I'm assuming you're looking for input as we go through this. Mm-hmm. Is there a way to take out the word complaint? Could that be any more insulting to our state employees by having a transportation complaint hotline that reports waste, inefficiency, or abuse? What if I want to call up and say, man, the way that person moved that snow plow was phenomenal. I want to report the great, great work being done by XYZ work crew. They set a model for how state employees ought to operate. To me, we're moving awfully, awfully negative with those three words. Maybe there's a way to wordsmith it in a way to...
A comment line
or something like that.
Senator Meyer.
It's an interesting discussion. What I'm kind of hearing, other than some of the major points, is it sounds like everybody's saying, you know, we kind of like it just the way it is, which would be okay with me. I actually thought ODOT was operating pretty darn well and didn't agree with that. But that's not what we heard going in. I think, you know, there's some major points here, you know, that came out of the group. Do we need to expand the commission from 5 to 7? What I'm hearing most people say is no, you're fine with just 5 the way it is, with just the general designation, and at least one member has to be from the east side of the mountains. Major change would be, should the ODOT director be appointed by the governor or by the OTC? It used to be by the OTC for probably 100 years, and for the last 10 years it's been by the governor. I've heard complaints about that. The policy committee, or the efficiency committee, I'm hearing people don't like that. There's actually one that already exists inside ODOT. Maybe we can just be silent and not say anything, but that's what we heard a lot, is people like the Colorado Commission model. We can take the word, you know, Inspector General out. That's more image than substance. All it really is the internal auditor. The question is, in terms of independence, do you want the internal auditor to report up through the administrative chain, or do you want some independence so they're reporting to the governing body? It's a simple question there. It's really not that complex. Most of the language changes that people are talking about already exist in the statute. All Heidi did was move them around in a more logical order and remove the redundancy. She didn't really add much. The hotline exists, as Representative Smith already exists. I think Representative Benson had raised the question, do we need a flag police where people who are upset about the 5 guys they've seen standing by a truck have a place to call? And then the website is, can you report that to give the public a sense that they're getting responded to?
That's Senator Johnson.
Senator Johnson. Well, following on what the good chair said, we have made this much more proscriptive. I agree with your shorthand analysis, and that's where the committee started. Mm-hmm. But in this particular draft, we have built in all kinds of proscriptions in the website. And I asked myself as I read this, if we fail on one of these, does it then become lethal? Who pays for it? Excuse me. Does this come off the top? Is it shared by cities and counties? I don't know the answer to that. I think your shorthand analysis is terrific, and it's kind of where the accountability committee started. Mm-hmm. There also appears in this draft a bunch of other stuff that I think is policy that our committee never talked about. There seems to be judging projects based on a whole lot of criteria that include greenhouse gases, and I just don't know how we can figure out some of this stuff. And so I very much like your shorthand explanation of where we are, and to maybe take a more simplistic shot at what appears to be pretty complicated.
Further comments?
Good, let's move on to the accountability
Senator.
Subcommittee then. You guys are all such a cheery folks tonight. If you look at the very bottom, we actually diverted off of this. This is the very bottom one right here. Establish a joint stakeholder management and fishery accountability committee. This is a subcommittee or an advisory group to the OTC board. We talked a little bit about this at the beginning of this discussion. This is the group in which has all, you know, stakeholders in it. Remember, there is some sort of an accountability, and hopefully Representative Olson and Senator Taylor, who are familiar with, there is some sort of accountability group in there. And Representative Olson talked a little bit about, you know, the suggestion that was made by the ODOT director. So the question then at the bottom of this page is that do we want to have some outside stakeholders on an accountability advisory board working with ODOT to help them both improve and identify, as Representative Smith points out, the good things that they're doing and make sure that those good things are amplified out there. So that's another piece. I think that came from one of the other states was recommended. But I think Representative Olson or Senator Taylor can kind of highlight that. Representative Olson probably needs to explain it.
So anyways, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry. We'll go here first.
Yeah. Senator Boquist was right on. I mean, that was one of the things we talked about. We looked really hard at. The McKinsey audit referred to what Colorado had been doing. They do have the EAC there. I think it fits in really well about the discussion of do we want to have maybe somebody on the outside come in too. Well, Senator Girod was interested in having some type of an engineer involved in it. What was to prevent that, to have somebody there in that environment? You know, I was working for them back there, and that's why we were looking, and, you know, shoot, it gets back to we spent $1 million on this audit.
I think Senator Johnson.
I would submit that we don't need this. As I look out over the audience, it functionally is the Efficiency and Accountability Committee. None of you are short of opinions. And if we build some formalized structure, and I say that with respect and affection, if we build some formalized structure, it's going to be a food fight every single time to see who's on it. And if you're not on the at the table, you're on the menu. This will be a point of aggrievement for somebody. Who decides a stakeholder? Do we start then reserving spaces for bicycles, transit, aviation? I think that this will turn out to be a nightmare about who gets appointed and who feels cranky that they weren't, or that somebody else was.
Well, Senator Johnson, there's two aviation slots on there.
Thank you. It's a visionary idea, and I think you expand it to three, and I'm a yes.
So as we can see,
it's a much more complicated evening, I think, than we anticipated.
No, I actually anticipated this is going to be the worst. We started with the best, and we're moving downhill, so this is pretty good here. Moving on, since it doesn't appear to be that there's a large group of individuals that are thinking a subgroup or this accountability advisory board is necessary. So having taken that in light, we'll move on to transparency, since you're all transparent on the fact that you don't like that particular entity. This was another one of the things that came out of the language that's in there. You look at the top of the screen, an improved project website with state, county, and city data, standardized project selection, project status reporting for state and county projects, and online log of complaints and positive, you know, hotline information coming in. I do want to point out that, as several of you have noted, there are some errors that I did catch in here in regards to measurements. The goal was to be able to at least identify, you'll remember, in our overall scheme of, you know, how many miles of good, fair, poor pavement we have. And then one of the points in there that you recall we were asked about by the counties and everybody else when we heard the governor's visioning panel is their need for various funding sources. And so culverts is in there. Culverts is not one of the measured performance items. Culvert was supposed to end up back in there only as please identify the number of major culverts that you have in your county or city or in the state so that we can, you know that we need to budget for that in the future. Not go out and inventory culverts and say this one, you know, rotted out last Tuesday, which happened on Highway 99. Thanks, ODOT. They went out and fixed it 2 weeks ago, so that is a good thing. So that's a positive plug for ODOT Representative Smith. And they actually do a pretty good job in my district.
Senator, I think Senator Monroe had a comment.
But
we haven't talked much about who appoints the head of ODOT. come up, but I haven't heard any agreement there. The OTC rightfully would like to have some kind of a voice in it, but if you try to take it away from the governor completely, then you have a big battle on your hands. So is there some way that both the OTC and the governor could be involved, such as let the OTC pick, give the governor a veto, or let the governor pick, but from with the advice and consent of the OTC, or something? I'd like to see a procedure where both entities have a voice in who's the head of ODOT.
I don't disagree with you. I mean, only from the perspective of I'm not sure we have other boards and commissions. That would be a novel, something slightly more novel than what we have. I think it's a good idea. Is there other comments?
Oh, there must be. Senator Meyer.
I mean, the reality is that Oregon operates under a boards and commissions system, and it's a mix. Some of them the commission or board appoints, such as forestry.
Yes.
In fact, most of the big ones the board appoints. Governors never like that. Doesn't matter what party or who they are, governors want to preserve their executive authority. I believe if you're going to have, personally, if you're going to have an entity that you're going to hold fiduciary responsible for something, they need the right to appoint the CEO.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just reality. Maybe to answer your question is that the OTC in consultation with the governor appoints.
Something like that.
Yeah. Other comments on who appoints the
anyway.
ODOT director? Going once? Going twice?
What's going? We're going to draft with the OTC appointing and fight about it later.
I agree with Rod. I'd like to have some sort of where the governor has more of a say.
And you see that good. When we got to two, you all started finally opening up here.
A little bit of a say. I mean, having a little bit more of a balance.
Representative Benz was up next.
Both of them should have some voice in it.
So I'm all in favor of the governor having some insight out. From my experience on a commission, when we had to select the director, it turned out that we did work in consultation with the governor, oddly enough, because we were all appointed by the governor. So I think we're going to be stating what's going to be happening in any event. But I'm happy to have it said.
I think you've got some down to the right somewhere.
Senator Taylor, did you finish your comment?
I just wanted to, I liked what Senator Monroe said of trying to have there be a little bit of a balance, be it that appointed with the veto power or, I don't know, something, because I also had questions about how the vice chair is selected, and it's not really defined in the draft about what the vice chair does. And who it says in the draft that the chair appoints the vice chair, and I don't know what the responsibilities are of the vice chair. But
that's the way it is now.
And maybe it is the way it is now, but I'm just curious about what that means. And
Senator Byer.
This is... I kind of wonder if this is a discussion without any real substance. The reality is governors always have a voice. And I've used many times, my best example was Governor Kulongowski's firing of the president of Safe Corporation. There's not a body in the state that has more perceived, if not real, independence than the board of Safe. And he went in and fired the CEO and appointed his general counsel as the person who's still there. I mean, that's just reality. Governors will always have that authority.
Representative McLean.
I want to support Senator Monroe in this way. Why set up a structure that looks for, tension? I think we should try to talk a little bit about, again, how do you make sure that it's a consultation that starts with good communication all the way through? And so I really hope that I don't care if you have OTC consult the governor or the governor consult OTC, but I think it should be a joint endeavor. I hope it'll be a joint endeavor.
Senator Winters.
I just don't want us to forget that even with the consultation between the OTC and the governor, that you also make certain that there's Senate confirmation.
Yep.
Just need to put that in so that we've got all three involved in the process.
That's good.
I'm there.
I'm with the chair. I like it as simple as you can get it, and I think the OTC should have the authority to pick the director. They have the responsibility, and I agree that if there's a problem there, then the governor, she or he, would have all kinds of ways to influence that decision. But I think that if you're putting fiduciary responsibilities on these people, that they then should have the right, as he said, to pick the CEO.
Further comments? Yes, Representative.
I'll jump in. I would lean towards the Senator Monroe and Senator Taylor and Representative McLean that I feel like a joint process is the best idea.
So could we make an attempt at drafting this in such a way that it would be an appointment by the OTC with a consultation
with the governor?
With the governor? Does that...
That sound good?
And...
Senator Monroe has
the Senate. And confirmation by the Senate. Confirmation
what
by
I
the
don't Senate. Want... is for the commission to appoint without any voice from the governor, and the only way the governor can get involved is to fire half the commission. That's what I don't want. That's why I'd like to have some logical voice for both of them get together and make the decision.
How about the OTC appoints in consultation with the governor appoints?
That'd be fine.
With a confirmation by the Senate, Senator?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Confirmation
with
by
confirmation
the Senate.
With confirmation by the Senate? Is that
absolutely.
Yep.
Okay, now we finally got at least the majority of you nodding your heads.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, we will make an attempt to craft that. Moving on, Senator.
Moving on. Going back. Transparency. We talked a little bit, and I have a few questions here. We had talked and listened to developing a website someplace in here. Is information regarding that, a website that would list the projects, the status of those projects, estimated costs, dates of completion, annual expenditures, information along that for public consumption.
Senator, I think Senator Johnson has a comment.
Two. The first one is that the Congestion Committee, as you recall, had the benefit of seeing a website product that ODOT has developed. And I don't know how much this language corresponds with the product that ODOT has already written. You recall that we saw the website. It didn't function quite as well the night that it was presented as it would if it were live and going. And I would leave it to ODOT to comment on how far along they are in the development. But I didn't want us to get into writing highly prescriptive language here for a product that ostensibly already exists.
And just to that, I mean, ODOT has been working with the cities and counties in terms of how to integrate them into that web page, and so that there would be simplified information. And on that, along with the linkage of some of the existing information that the counties already produce, and then that said, the counties and cities provide data to ODOT, and that is available. Also, it just needs to be put into one place and one time. And I know when the draft does come out of this, that the cities, the counties, and ODOT have been working, Senator Johnson, and they'll be able to look at, you know, whatever language, semi-final draft language comes out, so they can see that and ensure that that is what is transpiring. It's not meant to be prescriptive. It's, once again, you know, we've got staff drafting stuff and with less guidance than 14 members.
Mm-hmm. One other question.
Representative Olson had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, again, following up with what Senator Johnson said, we did have the opportunity as the accountability group to visit with the members from ODOT, and they did show, so obviously somebody did really a poor job on trying to do anything with technical end of the display. But, I mean, that's the way it goes. But, you know, honestly, ODOT's on the right track with where you want to go on the website issue, and... I felt really comfortable with a lot of that discussion and what we saw that night.
Put a note on it.
Do that headline.
There.
Senator Johnson's got a comment.
I'd like some clarity as we work through this about who pays for it. The website, does this come out of ODOT's budget? Is that the contemplation? And I don't know if we've gotten down that far in the weeds, but that would be a question I would like articulated at some point.
And I believe they're already doing this. In fact, most of the information that I think Representative Olson and those that run the accountability and then some of the stuff we saw Senator Johnson, it's a matter of consolidating it all in one location. And really the only shortfall is that standardization, is trying to get the cities and counties to be using the same standardization that we talked about in our... In fact, if we go backwards, I think you can... We found somewhere in here we talked about that reporting of information and standardization to get everybody on the same sheet of music. I'm not sure the slide is actually here. Yeah, there we go, right there. This is basically, if you recall this slide right here, Oregon Pavement Conditions, that's really the only thing new and novel in here. The rest of the information is out there. It's just not been consolidated in a single point. ODOT has been moving that direction. And in this case, the consolidation would just be between the city and county information ODOT already has, with the pavement conditions that are on here and a little bit more public information, except that I would say the one new item is that we looked, if you remember, Senator Johnson saw the state of Washington had a project approval webpage, which was more in line with what are the projects we're doing, so that people could, when they're driving along and they see something good happening, they could go to the webpage and say, hey, this is going to be done in 18 months. I feel good about driving back down Highway 97, so on and so forth like that. And if you recall, Senator Johnson, what we heard from WSDOT was that this was a great tool for actually marketing WSDOT. And we're saying the same thing here, because people see a positive impact, much like I think Representative Smith wants to say his take, and I agree with him. Sell our own bandwagon.
Representative Smith.
I just want to echo exactly what you're saying, Senator. Back in, I think it's 2009 or 2010 when we passed our last package, I just happened to be driving up through Spokane, and there was a beautiful WSDOT sign that talked about another project brought to you by the Transportation Act of 2008. And it left a real impression on me, not of, oh, crap, I got to drive through a transportation project, but, wow, this is a great investment that's going to improve Spokane. And I would hope as part of our transparency effort, we've right. put a positive spin on it and yeah, talk about the good use of our dollars and what it's meaning to communities.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
I completely agree with you. But I wonder, if I'm just Joe Citizen and I want to see how am I doing here and I want to feel good about a project, I'm not sure that in doing this written analysis of costs and benefits that very many people care about the discount rate used in the analysis or, those sorts of things. Again, I think we've taken a very good thought and we've blown it up to a size and dimension that is going to be really difficult. And the other thing that I want to be clear about is that as we look at how prescriptive much of this is, we still have to get a package passed, and everything that we add lards up the fiscal. This is going to have a fiscal that's so big it can't get out of its own way, and I just think we have to keep that in mind.
I would just also remind you that you're going to risk just as many problems if we're not accountable. Keep it simple, stupid, but if we don't prove we're accountable for it, you're going to face quicker route to a referendum and a referral than you will see anything else that's out there, because we just spent $1 million for the McKinsey study, and whether we like it or not, the Secretary of State's audit and some of the other information out there. But the basic idea is keep it simple, stupid, and try and make it as easy to understand, but as broad of reach so that the public believes that their money is going to be spent wisely.
Thank you. Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair McKeon. So when Representative Lively and I were looking through the bill, when it comes to the website, one of the things we were wondering about is the coordination with the state and local municipalities, and about how, because when they have their half, they have their money that they're contributing, are we talking about the website just being 100% ODOT projects, or ones where, for example, we're sharing the funds but ODOT's in charge of them? I just wanted to throw that to the drafters just to be clear about if we're going to have a website with information about projects, are they 100% ODOT projects? Are they projects with partnerships? Or are they going to be talking about any kind of projects that is using money from this transportation package? I just wanted to, I don't know what the answer is, but it wasn't really clear in the bill. So,
I know that the cities and counties are working with ODOT. I don't think there's an envisionment for to list to take the thunder away from the cities in terms of that, but trying to help augment their information that was available. But I don't think
there
actually
could be links. I don't know. Yeah. I just because that'd be a lot of projects. I don't know. It wasn't in there. So thank you.
Wasn't on the accountability work group, so I don't know the answer to that question.
Moving on.
Additional information. Project approval information we just talked about. Is there any other comments in terms of the projects themselves? I guess we will turn to the accountability draft, the rough draft that you have that's in front of you. I think some of you have made comments on it in various sections. Again, my understanding of it and a lot of the language in here is existing law that's simply been moved around. So some of the prescriptive things that you have in here, I just want to warn you, might be existing law. If there's something in here that you would like to point out that you've read, that you've got, I think we got this last Friday, that you want the drafters to look at or you want to get additional information from, I want to give you an opportunity to comment on that. Lastly, with that, I would ask that it was our understanding that some of you actually did do some review of it, and then some of the drafters told us they thought you members were going to get back with them to actually make those changes. And so they were waiting to make those changes until they got further information. That's what they conveyed to us. So if there's information that needs to be reconveyed to them, we'd appreciate you to do that. In addition to that, if there are comments in here, obviously they will be working on this draft over the next week or so, but we need to have comments fairly quickly of red flags, red herrings, and stuff that jumped out in suggestions so that we can make that editing through it. Because I will assure you the four members that have been working on this actually didn't draft this. We tried to take all the information and give guidance. But if there's something in here, is there individuals that are sitting at the podium that have specific comments in here that you want us to go back and look at again? Or if you're going to take it and bring it back, please don't wait more than a couple of days because there is a time schedule out there, and the drafter would appreciate that.
Senator Johnson.
I'm going to channel Representative Smith for a moment. Some of us throughout this committee of the round have made representations about moving things forward to drafting just simply so we can get a bill draft. But I don't want any of us to be held accountable to say, well, you said that in committee, ergo, you're a yes.
No.
This appointing authority for the OTC, I think we need to work through very carefully for the director of ODOT. And it's going to be imperative to actually see language that reflects the conversation that we had tonight. So I just want to say agreement to move to drafting doesn't mean we're okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Understood. Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just throw out one thing that popped up. Section 13, the written analysis of costs and benefits of proposed transportation projects. I just wondered how this compares to what the current process is, or if there is a current process equivalent.
Section 13.
Section 13, I have no idea what page it is, but I just know it's Section 13.
I'm
going to look to staff.
I believe that written analysis of cost benefit proposed transfer. I believe this is actually Nevada language. It looks to me like it came out of in terms of the McKinsey study, and in terms of Nevada language and how they did their assessments. I believe that's where it's from. That's an estimate on my part because I do recognize this as some of the discussions we've had in some of the work groups. But that's somebody else might have a better recollection than I have.
Right. What is it? How does it compare to what the process is now? Is there a process?
To that, I'd have to turn to the staff.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're prepared to answer that tonight.
Probably not.
And they may not have seen this language. I don't believe they actually have because the
Director,
council
have you
didn't
seen
want
this language?
It.
Have not.
He has not.
Okay. Then.
So I am flying blind, Madam Chair, and again for the record, Matthew Garrett, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. Yeah.
Director, without putting you on the hot seat, having never
Too
seen
late.
This document, I'm wondering if you would like to get back to us on this.
I think it's prudent. We will certainly get a narrative back to you. I will tell you, we do have data-driven management systems that inform the way we invest in bridges, in pavements, the discipline where we get to some of the capacity type issues with different way of doing it. But we can, I think, for the committee to engage on, we will write down exactly the discipline we follow. I'm not familiar with what is written or the state that it may come from.
Thank you.
Can we get back to you on that?
You sure can.
All right. And I'm not sure which state this language came from. I don't.
Could anybody
enlighten
us to that?
It's
Nevada.
It is Nevada.
It is Nevada.
Nevada.
Okay. Other comments? We have section 13. Anybody like 14?
Well, I want to. Do we like the roads in Nevada? Have we actually analyzed if we like the roads in Nevada? We like their language, but we don't know about the roads.
Well, I just point out.
I want to see Nevada do this and bring it here, and then we can talk.
They've got plenty of nice roads because they don't have anybody driving on them.
I just want to point out to you, unfortunately, the former ranking member of the United States Senate is from Nevada, so when I get on Nevada, roads are really pretty good, but that has nothing to do with Nevada DOT, I think. It has everything to do with the United States Congress giving them more money.
I was just checking, but I want you to read this.
In Las Vegas, there's no traffic.
Thank you, Director.
Thank you. Other comments in the next 90 seconds?
We're at 7.
Huh?
We're at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, right, we're almost 7 o'clock. So colleagues, I have appreciated being your facilitator. And for the record, Senator Johnson, this is not my plan. I'm the facilitator here. And it doesn't mean whether I'm voting yes or no on any portion of this particular package. But with that, I would be happy to turn it back over to the co-chairs and assure you that I will not be voluntold once again to be the facilitator in the future. So we are done.
Senator Winters.
Before our facilitator leaves, I think we ought to give our facilitator a round of applause.
Oh, hey, out there. He had his vest on, too.
Well, committee, we had not planned on meeting Wednesday night. I'm looking around to see to my co-chair, my vice chairs, whether we need to reconvene on Wednesday or if we are complete. We will plan on having a draft to the committee by the 31st. That's our goal, with a meeting on...
Hopefully before the 31st
for a meeting on the 31st to actually walk through the bill. So that is the schedule that we are on then, and then subsequent to that, hold public hearings on the bill. So we're shooting for the 31st. Happens to be my dad's 96th birthday, so that is a very good day. But any other parting comments from this evening's meeting?
That's more like it, Andy Olson.
All right, and we are adjourned.
That's more like it.